And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, August 24th, 2020. We are trying to get a hold of Dave. I guess we're having some sort of connecting issues, and so hopefully he'll be here soon. August 24th, 2020 is today's date, but let's go ahead and get started with the market report. Gold today, you know, people do take advantage when we have these dips. I mean, we've seen the prices rise, you know, pretty significantly without even a breather taking place. So we're having a breather. No big deal. You have gold down $15 today in the New York spot price. Aftermarket, you're looking at $1,927. You have silver down 37 cents at 26.55. Platinum was down 7 at 919. And palladium was down 11 at 2,208. The USDX today is up 14.14, that is, at 93.34. Crude oil is up 5 pennies at 42.39. And the paper markets, let's move to that screen. You know, it really is ridiculous. But the markets like it. They're trained to react. The Dow was up 378 points at 28,308. The NASDAQ was up 67 points at 11,379. The S&P was up 34 points at 3,431. And you know what? All of this is all based on, you know, the push for plasma treatments for the coronavirus. And all the promises of vaccines now before the election. It's like, really? Are you kidding me? Like, that's really going to change everything. It's like if we have a vaccine today, it's just going to wipe out the last 7-8 months. Remember, we were in a recession, February. So the promises of jobs, a million a month, I think, is a new promise from the administration. Anyway, we'll talk about this later. 10-year yield, 0.65%, up 0.01. And Germany was up large. They all liked the news. Germany was up to almost 2.5%. London was up 1.75%, Hong Kong 1.75%. So those markets liked it well. And so again, we're just back to the same old stuff, for a lack of a better term, on a Monday afternoon after a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. So let's go ahead, if I can bring up some reports here. You have, you know, we talk about this. I'm only going to dip on it or talk about it. We're going to talk about a double dip recession. There's a 1 in 4 chance the economy could fall into a double dip recession. Again, National Association for Business Economics are talking about a double dip. 2/3 of the National Association for Business Economics, NABE, NABE members say the economy has not yet come out of the recession that started in February. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure all this stuff out. 80% see a 25% chance of a second dip. You know, they have 235 members in the semiannual survey gave good marks to the Fed's stimulus efforts. Well, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't, you know? It's not their dime. Maybe it's part of their dime, but mostly it's the citizens, the taxpayers of this country's dime, you know, keeping the system from falling apart, pumping in money to where the wealthy really do get wealthier. I mean, I don't care if the wealthy get wealthier, if they do it on hard work and their intelligence, their sacrifices to their companies, but they don't. They're getting wealthier on government bailouts. You know, and that is wrong. 75% believe the Fed's current monetary response is appropriate. Nobody talks about how bad things are to justify the Fed's monetary response as being appropriate. Are you kidding me? Nearly 60% expect the federal funds rate range to remain unchanged, of course. By the end of 2021, it's going to be there for a lot longer than that. Most expect that the fund's rate target is going to be higher by the end of 2022. If they're talking about 2022, things are not going to be turning around too quick. You know, and
wait,
while
Melody,
we have...
I'm here with you if you need me. I'm right here just listening to you.
Who's this?
This is
a
Pastor
voice
Butch.
In my head?
That's a voice in your head. Finally, you finally got an intelligent voice in your head.
How did you get there?
Magic.
Is this a recording?
Is this a party to whom I am speaking?
Hey, you know what? There is such a thing as what do they call it? Herd psychosis. Herd. Well, if I'm hearing a voice, that means all the listeners are hearing a voice too. So, we're all hearing voices in our heads.
Not just me. Todd called me up and I thought, well, I'll join you for a little bit and just see how things are going. I didn't have any news prepared today, but I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I know Dave was having a hard time. He had internet connections. And you know, it's interesting that we had internet interruptions today. I've had people from other places in the country say they had internet disruptions today. Now, does that make some sort of a conspiracy theory or... No, but it's interesting. And I do know when Comcast can go down, they can go down and their cables and so forth are all mess. I mean, they can be out. The problem can be in Ohio and you could have, 20 states affected by it. So, I mean, that's a possibility. But, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good to be here. It kind of was a shock and surprise, but I don't mind being here at all. I always enjoy it. And, of course, I went up to New York.
I think I was more surprised and shocked than you.
Well, how about that? Would you say happy birthday to you, although such a birthday, here I am. But anyway, we went up to New York, to do a funeral of my first cousin and last week. So I went with you, on Thursday. And I have to say, New York's a place I don't want to live. But nonetheless, I was there. For what it was a good trip. I enjoyed some time with extended family I hadn't seen for a long time. But I'm back in the area again, trying to get back in the groove, so to speak. I will keep watching what I can stomach of the news and watch the insanity just keep on spreading and exploding. And we're just, just a couple months away from another so-called election. And Melody, I don't know what's going to be. I haven't even got a chance to check the markets today. Jenna checked gold and silver. I haven't got a chance to do that yet. How'd they do today?
Well, they were down. There was some pressures, but a little bit of strength in the dollar. And, of course, with Trump's, I mentioned coming into the program with his executive order of pushing the plasma, the convalescent plasma through. Of course, that made everybody real happy and with promises that there will be a vaccine possibly prior to the election that pushed, everything higher. But I was just talking about how a lot of these economists are communists too, but these economists are seeing a chance of a double dip recession. And, there's Goldman Sachs says 25% of these furloughs are going to be permanent. I mean, we've talked about this, and there's just more and more people are coming out saying that, hey, it's, this is kind of a no-brainer. Things are not going to be better. And I do, since you're on the program today, I don't know if you saw this headline, but what do you think about Falwell?
On his picture? Is that what you're talking about?
No, Falwell and his sexual escapades. He says it's blackmail.
I'm not going to say it. I don't know that. I cannot confirm that, but I have got a picture of him standing with a young lady, and I'm going to say what's on there, standing there with his pants dipped and unbuckled in the woman's too. hugging up, and her wearing short shorts and a tank top, and they're, that's why they're standing there. Now, I can't say anything beyond that. I wouldn't do it, but the picture's real. It was really there. To say it's disappointing is an understatement. I mean, for any Christian, but especially a pastor, to take a picture with a woman other than his wife, even with his wife, you don't stand around with your pants unzipped. I'm sorry. That's just not something you do. So, that alone is incriminating, to say the least. So I can't speak on the other issues. I don't know, but I did see the picture, so I know that's real. And anyone that would do that and put the picture out, I have questions about their character, period. I have to be quite honest with you, I do. I mean, I just can't imagine why anyone, any preacher especially, want to take a picture with a young girl with both their pants unsnapped and unzipped, and I don't get it. I'm sorry, folks, I don't get it. There's no excuse for that. No excuse for that.
Well, you know, Butch, I think we always talk about morals and values and all this and that, and it's like I think this nation has become so wealthy. You know, we talk about the decline of it, but there's a lot of money out there, and there's a lot of people who are very wealthy.
Well, yes.
And I just don't, and I think, you know, when we talk about the, you know, the root of all evil is
the
money.
Love of money, the love of money. And, you know, and that's prophesied, again, many places in Scripture, always prophesied at a lot of places. But in Hosea 4:7, the Lord said, the more they increased, or the more they prospered and grew, the more they forgot him. That's just human nature. What do you need God for? We got everything. You know, I mean, that's just the way people think. And even the middle income in this nation have been wealthier than most of the world wealthy.
Yes.
And even the lower classes, we'll say lower classes, lower class financially, have been wealthier than most people in the world. So, I mean, so this is, we have to understand, this is something that, yeah, you're right, it's made us soft. It's made us careless. It's made us callous. You know, I have a...
It's made us evil.
It has. I have a... You may have heard this. Have you heard of the a bird's eye view of the evolution of nations? Have you heard that before?
A bird's eye view
of the evolutions of nations. It's by Alexander Tyler. He said this: from bondage to spiritual faith.
Yeah.
From spiritual faith to great courage. From courage to liberty. From liberty to abundance. And there's where it starts turning around. From abundance to selfishness. From selfishness to complacency. From complacency to apathy. From apathy to dependency. From dependency back to bondage. Doesn't that fit us pretty much?
It really does. And it is a cycle.
It is a cycle. It is. People forget what it cost to bring forth this nation or any nation. And people forget the God that protected them and brought it out. They forget. They just have a tendency, as generations go by, to forget the moral values, to forget their foundations, and to go on from there. And the Bible tells us in Psalms that it says that when the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The foundations of America, as we know them, even in our lifetime, Melody, the morals we had growing up, are all gone. Now, I'm not saying everyone doesn't. Everyone has forgot about them. But I would say 80%, 85% of people have forgot about them. And if you don't believe me, folks, go out into to the public and watch people. Talk to people. Ask, see the comments. Listen to what they have to say. Watch how they dress. Watch how they act. They have very little knowledge of solid right and wrong anymore. They may have some gray areas that think they're halfway right and halfway wrong, whatever, however you look at it. But as far as virtue and having 100% knowledge of what's right and wrong and how they dress and how they talk and how they act, I don't care where they go. Even if they go to the church, a lot of them have no idea what it means to be virtuous, to be pure morally, and to live the way we're commanded to in the Scriptures. They've just forgotten that. They really believe it's okay to do otherwise. So the foundations have been destroyed in America. And no matter how hard we try, and I'm not saying we shouldn't try, but no matter how hard we try, unless we turn back to the foundations that we once had through Christ, there's not much hope for the country. We're going to see further division. We're going to see further chaos. We're going to see further destruction of not only our economy, but of the families. Obviously, the families have fallen apart. And then when the families are gone, which are the building blocks of society, once you destroy the family, there's nothing to build on. That's what holds the country together, our family units. that taught right from wrong and responsibility. But that's been going, Melody, for quite a while. The attack on the family has been very thorough and almost complete now. That's where we are in America today.
You know, it really is. And when you come down to it, if you look at why there was the destruction or what was the beginning of the destruction, and I know people get tired of me continuing to say this, but it all comes back to our monetary system. You know, it all started with inflation. It started a little bit before that, but, you know, by giving the woman to vote, the right to vote, it started then with inflation, where the woman, one paycheck didn't work anymore. The man could no longer, you know, be the breadwinner of the family. You needed two paychecks.
Well, and
so
and
the
World
woman
War
goes
II,
to work, and they
World War
and
II.
They and they
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And they viewed this as women becoming stronger. And granted, you know, there's some very talented women that really should be in the workforce. But on the other hand, you know, women should still be at home raising their children.
Making
but
a home.
They couldn't.
Making a home. That's what I call them homemakers.
Making a home, but they couldn't.
World War II had a lot to do with that. When the men were gone, the women would come out, and they, you remember the Rosie the Riveter and all that come out. And they never went back into the home. When the men come home, they stayed in the workforce. Because, like you said, it made a better living. They had two incomes.
Yeah,
and that's... Go ahead.
I mean, I can remember reading old magazines, going in antique stores and picking up the old posts, you know, from the 50s. And
oh, yeah.
They're just fascinating, you know, to see the articles and so forth. And a lot of them were on inflation, because that's when inflation really started. And, you know, the articles about the housewives were paying from, you know, 4 cents a pound for, you know, steak. They ate better in those days than we do today. To where they would have to pay 80 cents a pound, and they just went crazy.
Yep, that's very true.
But then they didn't eat steak anymore. I can't remember, as a child growing up, eating hamburger. That just wasn't a staple. Because you had roasts. Hamburger became popular because the better cuts of meat became too expensive. The only time we had a hamburger is if we went out to eat at McDonald's.
It was a treat. It's like having a Coke or something. But we raised our own food. We raised our own meats. We had chicken, and, you know, we even had hogs in. Grandpa had cows. We had fresh milk and all that. We had that. We didn't grow this torn by much in the way of meat anyway. We didn't have to. Of course, that's a thing of the past for sure. Obviously, that's
We're heading into a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, and it is Monday. And I'm here with Butch Paul. Thank you.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Well, this is going to be an unusual program today. So, we were having technical difficulties. This is a recap. We had technical difficulties at the beginning of the program, and we couldn't connect with Dave, so Pastor Butch Paul joined in to, see if, in case we couldn't connect with Dave throughout the program. So that's why you heard the two of us for the first segment. Well, during break, we were able to connect with Dave. So now, guess what? There's three of us on the program. We have Dave is back, was able to connect. Butch Paul is going to stay on. And, you know, heck, we may as well invite callers today.
There you go.
Why not? Butch, you have that number?
I do. It's 844-769-2944. 844-769-2944. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to finish a statement we made. We started into the last segment there about the ladies and home and the family. I've always said this, as I've been preaching well over 40 years now. I've always said this, that men can build a house. I can put a house on a roof. I've done it for a living for a while. I can put a house on a roof, and I can make it dry and warm. But it takes a woman, the wife, to make it a home, to put the little things in and make it a nest, I guess you could say, where everybody feels comfortable. My wife, Marcia Jean, is one who took the house that I might remodel and redo, whatever, and puts touches to it that makes it a comfortable place to be as far as feeling at home. So that's why I say the man providing for the family, the wife taking care of the home, makes a secure environment for the whole family. And that's the way our God meant to be. Unfortunately, that's not that way in most places today. It just isn't. A whole lot of homes there are just cold places. That's where they live, that's where they eat, that's where they sleep, but it's not really a home, it's a place to stay. There's a big difference between the two. Now, I'll shut up and let y'all go where you want to go.
Well, no, I mean, you got a point, and I just wanted to bring Dave in. I didn't say hi, Dave. Welcome to the program.
Well, hello there, Melody and Butch.
Hi.
Hello.
And, we were talking a little bit of, the evolution of the countries and so forth, we were talking about, someone was telling me not too long ago, they says, capitalism turns into communism, and communism then turns into capitalism. And I mean, it's kind of like everything, I guess, just does evolve to some degree. And I think if we look back in our history and we see how things have changed and where we've come today and how we are today with the stronger push, for socialism and the acceptance and so forth, it's a cycle to some degree. So, with that said, we've seen it. The first segment of the program, we talked about how our economy is not turning around. With this pandemic, it's almost impossible. There is no V-shaped recovery, and it's an election year. And all I've heard, and this week we have the Republican convention, and I don't expect to hear anything but all kinds of promises coming out, with the creation of millions and millions of jobs. Sure, we're going to go up in millions of jobs, but they're not newly created. But let's talk about the ones that were furloughed and got canned. Let's talk about the millions of jobs that aren't being brought back. Let's talk about the small businesses that are being shut down, that aren't creating jobs any longer. Who's creating jobs? It isn't small business anymore. You know, who's creating jobs? This isn't, we're not having millions of jobs being created by manufacturing coming back to this country. That's not going to happen.
Well, business has been the backbone of this economy all of our lifetime and longer. Small businesses are the ones that hire the teenagers for part-time work in the summer. They're the one that will take somebody in brand new and train them and bring them up through the ranks, so to speak. 200,000 of them are out for good. So how do they expect them to come back when they're closed for good? That's 200,000 businesses, folks. That's not mean to workers. That's businesses. If 20 workers work per business, that's a lot of people out of work right now because they're shut down for good.
Do you see anything different, Dave?
Well, I see some unintended consequences of, say, globalization, U.S. businesses, some U.S. businesses got big, far too many of them too big for their britches and for the rest of our benefits. I say while intentions were good, and you addressed this a little bit, Melody, in terms of the evolution of capitalism and communism, I might characterize it somewhat differently, but I think one of the largest unintended consequences of globalization, let me say this, I think that there's been much good out of that. One, it opened U.S. markets, for example, to a whole host of nations and their consumers, and in literally hundreds of thousands of cases has made business better for those U.S. companies. On the other hand, the irony in that, the other plus is that globalization has taken tens, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world out of horrendous poverty and impoverished conditions. Now, on the other hand, I also believe that the unintended consequence has been, excuse me one second, Melody. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry about that.
Sorry.
It's not a COVID cough. I assure you, not that it matters since we're 150 miles from one another. But the unintended consequence is that no one thought about is that so many, at least of the manufacturers, the U.S. Manufacturers, took that money and decided to run, leaving the confines of our nation. First, they moved from, say, the North, the unionized North, to the union-free South, where it was much cheaper to produce goods. And then when that got too expensive, perhaps from a taxation standpoint, reduced profits, they just left the country. And that's where we are now. And that's, I mean, one of the biggest challenges, and it was one of the Trump administration's economic goals, was to return manufacturing to the U.S. It's happened in such small numbers as to be, I think, negligible, the outcome of that. And I don't think, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the program, Melody. I don't see it happening in big numbers ever again. Now, perhaps someone will come along with a new model, whether it's a taxation model, whether it's another incentivized model that does turn that around. But that person deserves to be praised.
It can't turn it around. It can't be taxed because, you know what, the wages around the world are 10 times. They lowered our wages. They opened up other markets, Dave. But the thing of it is, and I look to D.C., I look to the politicians, they sold America out by not protecting our labor, our laborers, our workers.
Correct.
They didn't protect them.
Right.
And they opened up these markets to where jobs could flow freely overseas. I mean, hey, Chinese people can work on 5 cents a week. I mean, they can't compete. And it was unfair trade the whole time. And right. that's due to all of those little politicians sitting in those little offices in D.C. and getting paid, you know.
The offices aren't that little, actually.
Well, but they are little people. But they have destroyed our... And the thing of it is, yeah, I mean, you know, there's other countries in the world that their people's done well, but at the expense of our people, and that was wrong. We need to bring those jobs back. But how do you do it at this point in time? You can't.
There's no denying that this was done to save the manufacturers money. Maybe they didn't intend for that to hurt the economy here and hurt the people here. But it did, and I'm going to say that I have to think, you have to be awful naive or ignorant to not think it would make a difference where somebody can make a dollar an hour and survive, where you have to make 20 here to survive. And they knew that. So they paid that guy a dollar and a half an hour and cut our people off here. I mean, for example, the telecommunicators that you get when you call and ask for help with a product, whatever, they generally come out of India or somewhere. They're not paying a U.S. citizen to do that job anymore. They're shipping overseas where you can barely understand what they're saying anyway. But so they cut out the one who's getting paid $20 an hour for a dollar and a half, $2 an hour. And again, I understand that's business economics. I realize that. But it certainly does put a hurt on the working man who may live in doing that for a long time.
And I don't know what the answer is. You know, I don't know how you bring them, but I mean, taxation? Well, I mean, how much free, you know? I mean, they already had their taxes lowered. They already pay nothing compared to what they do.
Ross Perot said it would be a big sucking sound, so there they went. He was right on that. Ross Perot had it right with the big sucking sound, and they're going. And they are going. And getting it back, I don't see that is possible. Maybe somebody less smart than me figured it out, but I can't see it happening.
Do you see anything, Dave, that they could do to bring back? I mean, I think it's history, but...
No, I do too. No, I mean, the 2017 Tax Cut Act had a provision in it to incentivize, you know, sort of a one-time forgiveness of profits earned overseas for companies to, you know, reshore here in America. And you see how that worked. It didn't. So I think it's almost to the extent that we've got to get beyond thinking that manufacturing can return to this country in the numbers we had before the trade agreements of the 90s. It just ain't going to happen. We've got to think of different models to make it work for the American worker going forward.
What does that picture look like? I mean, it's, you know, it's grim. Because you got robotics, you got technology. So bring in the COVID and whack off a lot of people.
Yeah, you've got a pandemic. I mean, it's the uncertainty that COVID has wrought, not just in the U.S., but you know around the world, I think is so great that it's going to be difficult for anyone, for any small business, for any, particularly any Pan-American, any multinational corporation who employ the hundreds of thousands of workers to make long-term plans, because we just don't know at this point how things are going to play out. This is probably one of the some people would say that provides us possibly with a great opportunity, and at some point I suppose it will, and we can't wait until we're through this, and until this bug either miraculously goes away, which it won't, or that there's some kind of treatment or cure or prevention, which is more likely, that until that happens, well, We can't wait until that happens, is my point. That now's the time. Just as the good times are when government and business should have been planning better for these times by not running up debt to more than 100% of GDP, for example.
That was, but again, that's the only place they could go because of the fiat system and the corruption. And, you know, it was just, you know, that started a long time ago, and here we are.
That was inevitable.
It was,
inevitable. That had to happen. But, you know, another thought I think today maybe is, I have to believe that the corporate business around the world and our government and other world's governments also knew that to take jobs out of America and pay a foreign worker less money to manufacture the same goods could not benefit the American worker to the point that he's been accustomed to. It couldn't work that way, and they knew that. So they had to either cut ours back or increase the other nations. What I don't think they've done a whole lot of either one. Maybe some increasing in other nations, perhaps like you said, bringing jobs into nations where we're really poverty stricken, perhaps. But it certainly has not worked out to where Americans can live to the standard they were accustomed to. So they have to bring us down to the level where we're used to living on less, as other nations have been for years and years, which again is absolutely against free enterprise. That takes away the incentive for the workers, for sure. But I guess it does get the business incentive to keep on going and businesses to keep growing and multiplying around the world. But there's no way you can balance that out and keep it up to the standard we once had. It just can't happen that way. We either bring ours down or bring theirs up, meet somewhere in the middle, or totally take it down to what the whole world used to, one or the other. We can't have it. We can no longer have it both ways.
Well, if I was running the world or running the country, I mean, or if I had a pool of a large amount of money, I'd certainly look to start companies that were owned by my employees, by my workers. And I mean, I think that serves a lot of purposes. One, it builds in a better quality of life for my workers. It also, I think, prevents a lot of what we're seeing now in our country and a lot of the big public companies with stock buybacks, for example, that does no one good but the broad array of largely institutional stockholders.
Hey, I hear the music. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today
today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm with two guest hosts today. Our regular for Monday, Dave Allen, and our Tuesday regular, Butch Paul. So I want to thank both of you for joining us. We need to do this more often, maybe.
Sounds good.
If you two are up to it.
Well, it certainly brings in a different perspective in both ways, and Dave has a lot of perspectives that I'm sure enlighten me in a lot of things, and hopefully for me to him. But I'm enjoying it because I like a discussion. I like to have a discussion going where people can put in their input, and you might be surprised what you can learn from somebody else if you just pay attention.
Yes. And we had an offer for callers. Butch, would you like to...
Sure.
Give that number out one more time.
The number is 844-769-2944. 844-769-2944. And Dave, you brought up a concept about workers owning the companies, and I like the idea in a sense that it would give a lot more incentive for the workers to produce because they all prosper together. And however the system will work out, they get maybe bigger bonuses because they're producing more. And Melody brought a point that if that company's in a third world, how would that work? Now, I don't know if this would work that way or not, but if one corporation, say out of New York, owns a business in China, why couldn't a corporation with workers in the country that still, it will say, work somewhat with the company inside the country, own a branch in China also? I'm just curious about that. Would that not work?
I'm not sure what you mean, the
American corporation that maybe has a branch in America, but they open up a branch in China or somewhere else, but the workers in America own the plants in China or Hong Kong, where it may be. Would that not basically be the same thing as one corporation, one head owned it, just be in one of the same country?
Well, let's just take China, for instance. They're a communist nation. They're not going to allow the people to do that.
I'm talking about the workers in America, though. Not, I'm talking about the workers in America that work for the American corporation. They all go together and decide to open a plant in China. They as a group, want to open up a plant in China and share the profits there also. They own the plant there, too, and make decisions how the plant should run and different things. Would that not profit them also? Would that work that way?
That's not going to happen.
Well, probably not. Why it shouldn't. I mean, in theory... Well, everything, yeah, starts in theory. But what I'm arguing is that so long as there's the initial capital that comes to the company, presumably by the owner or a group of owners initially, and they, however they establish their company, all the profits that company makes, regardless of what country the profits are made in, are returned to its shareholders, which are the employees. And so in that respect, I think that regardless of the country where we're doing business, there's always going to be an incentive for the employees who own the company to probably be more productive than they otherwise might be. It'd be interesting to look at some case studies, presumably would be privately held companies, to see how that bears out, because that incentive might be squeezed somewhat, especially if everyone's making a high salary, but that rarely is the case. But in any event, that's where I'm coming from on that, Melody.
Well, no, I get the concept, and it is a great initiative for workers, and you know, I think that program would work, but you just got to pitch it to the companies.
Indeed.
Is it going to does government need to legislate it? No, they can't. You know, we talk about the trickle-down theory, and that doesn't work. This is basically, wouldn't this be almost similar to a trickle-down? And that just, you know, it just doesn't happen. It's a great motivator, and I agree with it. I just, you know. But anyway, in the perfect world, yeah, I think it would be great, but I don't know how you would begin to get corporations to do that now. They've had the taste of the good life for too long.
Oh, well, you won. Yeah, yeah. This it would have to be a new startup.
Yeah.
That would roll it out like that.
And, you know, we have those two major storms coming in at the in the Gulf. And it was interesting to watch some of the interviews within and around where Katrina hit so hard 15 years ago, which the anniversary is coming up on the 29th. And there's so many parts that still aren't even back from Katrina, you know, neighborhoods and so forth that, you know, were just basically scrapped and so forth. And they've been so hard hit, you know, because that is all tourism down there in those areas with the pandemic. Now that you have these storms coming in, one doesn't seem to be as severe as the other one, but yet no one really knows the outcome until both of them pass. It's just another area of this country that gets a double whammy.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't see, again, you know, how do these small businesses come back from it?
Well, you're talking about the Gulf Coast. I mean, look at California's on fire. I have a guest tomorrow night, Deborah Tavares, on. They've ordered them to evacuate their homes. She's not leaving, but they ordered them to where she lives. And of course, had the derecho through the Midwest. It took down thousands and thousands of acres of farm crops and destroyed silos and businesses. Yeah, now this is happening all over the country. And how many hits can a country take without staggering a little bit?
Well, you're right. I mean, if you live between Corpus Christi and Houston and on the west and New Orleans on the east, you're not sleeping the next two nights.
That's right.
And once the second storm, is it Laura?
Laura, yes.
Laura.
Comes ashore, you might not be sleeping for the next 3 days or more. You know, it's the amount of businesses that are going to take a hit, not to mention the insurance companies who've had unprecedented payouts over the last, 15 years? On an ongoing basis, but particularly since Katrina, the massive devastation, and Maria and the other storms just a few years ago, you begin to wonder, how long are those companies going to be able to sustain these huge hits to their balance sheets? And not to mention the federal government's flood insurance program and disaster relief aid.
Yep. Well, yeah, I don't know if they're going to if they're going to approve the flood insurance. I mean, there was issues last year. We waited until the last minute to see if they would you know, give money to Homeland Security to cover the flood insurance. So don't know what's going to happen this year. Haven't received any notices or anything. But, yeah, I mean, these cities and states, it's not going to get much better.
Well, and speaking of that, what's the latest on the relief package that they've been fighting over the last few months? What's happened with that?
Well, you've got the House. Pelosi called the House back into session on Saturday. They voted with, I think, 25 or 26 Republicans to approve $25 billion in what they're calling emergency funding for the Postal Service. Initially, some funding I'm not sure if it was the same amount, was part of the HEROES Act that the House passed in May, but we're reading as recent as noontime today that the Republicans and Dems are still far apart, that you know, the Dems, which started at $3.5 trillion, and the Republicans at one for stimulus 4.0, the Dems, Pelosi said, you know, they'd come down at least a trillion, and others have said they'd meet the Republicans halfway. McConnell is not bringing it up. And I think the conventional wisdom now, Butch, is that there's similar to how we fund government these days, there's probably not going to be any stimulus decision made until their hands are forced, which which probably means close to September 30th, when funding runs out for the 2021 fiscal year, which starts October 1st.
Yep.
Right?
That's probably true. That's true. And of course, the people are caught in between the two fights. And I was listening today to another broadcast. I think some 1,000 workers are going to be laid off in the airline industries because the money they got as a stimulus is gone now. Mm-hmm. All that was so huge, so much over my head. We're talking about trillions of dollars here. I don't know who wasted it. I don't know who got what. But, you know, obviously the trillions of dollars are put out are not keeping the economy flowing like they thought it would. You know, Dave, this is a symptom. You said, Melody said also, we keep throwing money at the situation, hoping to keep the economy floating a while longer with this money system that's not real money. It's fiat or digital on a computer, so we don't really have any money circulating. We have credit circulating, and it's going to come to an end. They can't throw enough money at it to keep it going forever. They've done it for now for how many years, and look at the trillions and trillions of dollars that we're in debt right now. It just isn't working, and it can't work. So inevitably, it's got to fall. It has to crumble. It's just a matter of when, but it has to crumble.
You know, Melody, Butch just mentioned digital currency, and we're hearing today how China is speeding up its version of digital currency there. And now with the Kansas City Fed sponsoring its annual Jackson Hole Symposium later this week, there's talk of the Fed looking to prioritizing development of a digital currency in the U.S. As well. And we were talking as recently as, 2 months ago, where, you know, to some extent, like robotization, you know, some might have thought that digital currency was inevitable, but then we pushed back against that and thought, just like, you know, a cashless society, that it wasn't inevitable, perhaps like robots are. But now here we are again.
Well, I think when we hear about governments talk about digital currencies and so forth, it's all about control.
Of course. It's all about
control. It is their control.
Yes.
And I do believe that is somewhere in the future, but I don't think they're going to usher it in until it is needed. I think it's a matter of conditioning people. I think that's part of the coin shortage and, you know, everything else. But I mean, we're almost cashless now anyway.
Yeah.
Probably a very large part. But there is still a large segment of the population that does use cash, and we can't forget about those folks. India tried it. It didn't work. They couldn't do it. Because there's so much backlash, you know, so when governments, you know, they might give people an option and so forth. And again, that's all kind of conditioning. But when they truly usher it in and it becomes their monetary policy, it will be after everything collapses. It will be after they default on the debt. It will be after people lose 70%. They're not going to go to digital when people are still having, you know, 100% of their retirement accounts available to them. That would be silly.
So that's when it'll be needed.
So that's when it'll be needed.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. There's talk about, and maybe this is part of the strategy that's taking place behind the scenes, that a digital currency could become a third mandate for the Fed to reduce income inequality that our fiat currency has wrought. I'm not sure how a digital currency could unwind that inequality, but
because everybody's money would be wiped out.
Everybody would
be on an equal playing field. That's how they, and then they get to control it. They just talk about going to a gold-backed currency again. The only way that's going to happen is if the right side wins, because this is still a battle. In my mind, it's still a battle. So it's you're either going to go cashless, the system's going to fail, and who's ever in charge will go that direction. You can still have the system fail, and whoever's in charge could go to a gold-backed currency.
I don't think
we'll go to a gold-backed currency.
The name of the game is still control.
Still control. And with gold, you have your privacy and no control. 800-375-4188. Thank you both. I had fun. We might have to do this again.
No, absolutely. Let's do it soon.
All right. Thank you, Butch. Thank you,
You're
Dave.
You're welcome.
And thank you, listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. And have a ball.